Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 23rd of October. We watched the third and final presidential debate last night, and we will talk about what we saw and what we heard. Many analysts said that this was pretty much a stay the course kind of debate for Republican Mitt Romney. At one point in the debate last night, the president said that Governor Romney had not been in a position to conduct foreign policy. Many analysts said before the debate it puts the governor at a disadvantage because the president has been conducting foreign policy for a number of years. There were people who said that the president was too aggressive as a combatant in this 90-minute exchange. Governor Romney was criticized for essentially agreeing with the president on a number of foreign policy issues and for changing his position on certain issues. Some analysts said, and I think that this may be right on point, as in the first debate, perhaps President Obama was told to not say very much, not to point out differences between the two candidates. Governor Romney may have been advised last night to not stir the pot as well, because there is a momentum on his side at this moment. Monday, slight rise in the polls and the belief on the part of the Romney campaign that perhaps that momentum will continue. And so you don't want to say anything that's going to stir everything up, which essentially is what happened last night. Although I thought it was really an interesting, very interesting debate. What did you think? We have two guests with us this hour. We're going to be speaking with a senior correspondent for Bloomberg News who covers U.S. foreign policy, the first part of our program. Indira Lakshmanan is with us, and also Karen Anderson will be joining us later, associate professor of communication studies at Colorado State University. Our phone number, we'd like to take a lot of calls during the course of this hour, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And you can always leave your messages on our Facebook page, which we like to read. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Indira, thank you so much for joining us. Hello.
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. A lot of analysts were saying, and I'm wondering if you agree with most of them, that somebody had advised Governor Romney to not stir the pot last night. He was agreeing with the president on a number of different issues. There wasn't a sharp attack on his part, which was different than the previous two debates. What was going on?
Well, I think you're right, Kathleen. I think someone told him, act presidential, show yourself out as a moderate, try to be someone who could, you know, enact foreign policy and don't scare people. And it was the impression I got that Governor Romney was in some ways trying to close a gender gap by not appearing to be a warmonger, by trying to follow a foreign policy in the tradition of Ronald Reagan, have a strong defense, but beyond that, try to keep the United States in peace. And, you know, so he didn't go for fighting words, and it was very striking, as you said, that he endorsed the president's policies on almost every foreign policy issue.
Mm-hmm. The most memorable line, and let's play a little bit of this now, was Obama was talking about the increased military spending, and this line people will remember for a long time. Let's play this and talk about what seemed to be a point of disagreement, and that's how much more money the military should have. This is the president, for those of you who didn't hear this debate, this is the president talking about the Navy.
I think Governor Romney maybe hasn't spent enough time looking at how our military works. You mentioned the Navy, for example, and that we have fewer ships than we did in 1916. Well, Governor, we also have fewer horses and bayonets because the nature of our military has changed. We have these things called aircraft carriers where planes land on them. We have these ships that go underwater, nuclear submarines. And so the question is not a game of battleship where we're counting ships. It's what are our capabilities? And so when I sit down...
Was that right on the point or was it condescending?
Well, I mean... He was certainly ridiculing Romney for having hammered not just in last night's debate, but several times before at saying that the president was supposedly stripping the military of its assets and that we were going to have fewer ships than at any time since 1917. And that was the contrast that Obama was trying to make, to say we don't need as many ships as we needed in 1917. And we have other facilities and other strengths. I mean, I think, you know, the problem is that Romney has approached this course of boosting defense spending and, you know, supposedly what would be a $4 trillion boost. And Obama has the ability to lean back and say, well, the Pentagon didn't even ask for these increases. You're offering money that the military hasn't asked for. And it's a complicated issue because how you judge how much Romney would be increasing defense spending or how much the Obama administration would be presiding over defense cuts depends on how you measure it, because some of this is related to what your listeners will know of as sequestration, which is basically this forced bipartisan budget control act, you know, forced spending cuts, and those affect the defense budget. So it's not necessarily that President Obama wanted to cut all of these things from defense, but some of it was forced upon him through this bipartisan budget control act.
President Obama talked about a military planning needing to be driven by strategy. Governor Romney came back and talked about what he thought may be a different policy for this country, one conflict at a time, not having our military be prepared for two conflicts at a time. Is that true?
You know, again, this is a somewhat of a shifting policy, because about a year ago, I went to the Citadel in South Carolina to cover Governor Romney's first major and to date still major defense policy speech. And in that, he talked about wanting to increase the size of the U.S. military by 100,000 troops. And again, at the time, he was questioned, why do we need 100,000 additional people in uniform if we're trying to wind down wars? If, you know, combat troops and all troops, for that matter, have been pulled out of Iraq, and President Obama and NATO have committed to withdrawing all combat forces from Afghanistan by the end of 2014. So he was questioned, why was he trying to do this? Was this just a full employment program, or what exactly was going on? So I think it's a bit confusing, because on the one hand, Romney tried to paint the picture last night of somebody who wasn't going to take the United States into more wars. At the same time, he, you know, certainly made it clear he would be more willing to do a military strike on Iran. It certainly, he was trying to imply that over its nuclear program, and that, you know, the number one priority for him was American strength overseas. So it's hard to really understand what is he wanting those military increases for, if not for the possibility of more military engagements.
Governor Romney talked about making sure people had education, the role of women in the Middle East, and these were his comments on terrorism and on the terror threat. And this will move us into a discussion of how we are dealing now with terrorism, if there were clear differences in positions outlined last night. Governor Romney from last night's debate.
I congratulate him on taking out Osama bin Laden and going after the leadership in al-Qaeda. But we can't kill our way out of this mess.
You know, Governor Romney, I'm glad that you agree that we have been successful in going after al-Qaeda. But I have to tell you that, you know, your strategy previously has been one that has been all over the map and is not designed to keep Americans safe or to build on the opportunities that exist in the Middle East.
Governor Romney outlined in some detail that we needed to persuade those governments that have taken over that may be a little bit more fundamentalist than we would like to change their policies so that women have more of a role, people get jobs, they are more educated. Was there a difference between the two on those issues, that's the best way to fight terror, that's the best way to bring democracy to the Middle East?
Well, first of all, I think that those particular points about promoting democracy, promoting women's rights, are things that Romney or his advisors have taken from Obama's playbook. It may be that they agree with them anyway, so maybe, you know, these are presumably values that both sides share here, but the, you know, specific support for democracy promotion and women's rights are things that are already in the assistance that the Obama administration is giving to these newly democratizing countries in the Middle East, including Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya. So that's part of the principle. In terms of, you know, whether there's a difference, I think that, again, I think this is a case where Romney was trying to show himself appealing to the independent voters by trying to say, look, I'm not scary. My foreign policy wouldn't be that different from President Obama's, but I would carry it out more effectively. One of the analysts who I talked to last night basically said it seemed as if the governor was trying to say he would do everything the president would do, but quickly, more successfully, more effectively, and, you know, and with more hugs for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That was another point he tried to make, is that he tried to show that he would be a better friend to Israel than Obama has been. And Obama tried to stress the point that he has actually increased military spending to Israel beyond any levels that it was at before. And that, you know, although he didn't mention it, his campaign has certainly mentioned that Defense Minister Ehud Barak of Israel has said that, you know, no one has been a better friend to Israel or helped Israel's security more than the Obama administration.
The president mentioned something about, I don't know if I can read my handwriting here, a dome? An Iron Dome. Tell me more about that.
Okay, so Iron Dome is basically a rocket defense program that the United States has supported for Israel. And what Obama did was he tried to very cleverly take the criticism from Governor Romney, who you know, alleged that President Obama had gone around apologizing for U.S. allies around the world, had gone on what Governor Romney has many times called an apology tour. And he was specifically in this case referring to the president's first trip to the Middle East as president, in which he didn't stop in Jerusalem. And Obama shot back and said, if we're going to talk about trips, the trips we've taken while campaigning, well, then I'm going to remind you that in 2008, when I was campaigning, I made a trip to Israel, and unlike you, I didn't take fundraisers with me. I didn't take donors. It wasn't as a campaign trip, but I went to the Holocaust Museum and reminded myself of the true nature of evil. And then after that, I went to a border town where people had been shelled by rockets from Hezbollah, and that reminded me of what it would be like if that was my family and my children, and that is why I have boosted spending, U.S. spending, to support Iron Dome. And Iron Dome is a project that basically protects Israel from these kinds of rocket attacks. It's a defense system that allows them to repel rocket attacks.
Let's find out what our listeners thought about last night's debate. We'll start taking phone calls momentarily. Our guest, the first part of the show, is senior correspondent for Bloomberg News, who covers U.S. foreign policy. Indira Lakshmanan is with us. Later, we'll be speaking with Karen Anderson, associate professor of communication studies at Colorado State University. Our number is 800-486-8655. We'd like to read your comments, too, if you want to send those via talk@WPR.org, or you could go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls. Let's start with Abdul in Madison. Good morning, Abdul.
Yeah, morning. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm okay. Well, I'm calling about the last night debate. Personally, me, I haven't had anything new from Governor Romney that how he's going to protect this country as far as foreign policy is concerned. And a lot of the things that I'm hearing today, that he tried to look presidential because he is ahead in the polls. Well, according to what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, I mean, the party 270 still said was the president. So I don't know how he's ahead in the polls. I'm confused.
Indira?
Well, I mean, I actually didn't cite any polls saying that he was ahead. I think there are a lot of polls that show them quite tight and getting tighter in swing states where the president had a lead. So I think the race has gotten a lot more difficult for the president, and that may be for a variety of factors, including what was considered his poor performance in the first debate. One of the things that I noticed about last night's debate was that Governor Romney did not appear comfortable. This is not his core material, foreign policy.
Yes.
And I think your viewers will notice that he was sweating pretty profusely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his upper lip had a lot of sweat on it. He was at times stammering. He repeated a lot of similar phrases. He kept referring to, you know, basically tumult in the Middle East. And he seemed to have memorized some talking points. He kept referring to a rising tide of chaos, for example. But the other thing that was striking was that despite all of the rhetorical noise around this campaign and at various, you know, commercials and campaign stops, there was very little disagreement between the two on substantive issue after issue. And on that, I mean Afghanistan. Governor Romney said, well, I'd also pull out troops in 2014. On Syria, he said, well, I, you know, think we need to be supporting the opposition and Assad needs to go. But his implication was he'd do it better. On the issue of Iran, he said, you know, I also wouldn't allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And then he said he supported sanctions and he supported diplomacy and he also supported a military option if Iran does not comply. Although very strongly his implication was that he would do all of this better than the president has been doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm guessing that polling has shown both of these candidates that on foreign policy, going into the first debates, that Obama had a real advantage over Romney. And that is true. I mean, there was a Pew Center poll, the Pew Center nonpartisan here in Washington, D.C., that showed in September that Obama had an advantage over Romney in foreign policy issues by 53% to about 38%. And then by this month, by early October, after the Libya crisis, with the deaths of the four American officials in Benghazi, including the U.S. ambassador, after that had played out, and the Romney campaign had been able to very effectively cast doubt on the Obama administration's handling of the incident, that lead had narrowed down to 47% for Obama to 43% for Romney, you know, putting it in virtually a statistical dead heat. So I think this is one case where Romney was essentially, you know, he was finding it difficult to assail the president's record. He was having to say, congratulations for killing Osama bin Laden. Yes, I support drone strikes. So a real contrast between style and substance. Him not having many differences on the issues, but trying to convince voters that he would carry out that policy more effectively.
Well, what was going on with the Libya situation? Because he used that to his advantage for a long period of time. That was in the news for a couple weeks, and the president seemed to be vulnerable on it. All of a sudden last night, it wasn't there anymore. Is it because of what happened in the last debate when that Rose Garden comment came up, or is that conversation over? They don't want to talk about it anymore. I was surprised.
Yes, I think a lot of people are surprised, including all the reporters who were covering the debate. I think on the one hand, it's not that the question, in some ways, the question didn't come up that specifically. The moderator, Bob Schieffer of CBS, although he raised the Libya issue, he sort of broadened the question to be more about the greater Middle East and what should be done there. And that gave the opportunity to both candidates to talk about it more broadly. It may also be that Romney felt he was caught on the back foot in the last debate when, by, you know, trying to be very specific about saying, I mean, let's keep in mind that in the last debate, when Romney made the point about the Obama administration not being straight about the causes of the Libyan attack, while Obama was able to get him by saying, I did mention acts of terror in the Rose Garden the morning after the attack. It's true, he did, but he spoke about it in a generalized and generic way. And it wasn't until many, many days later, until September 20th, that the White House spokesman came out and said, this is definitely an act of terror, and sort of distinguished it from something that rose out of a spontaneous protest over that video. So Obama was vulnerable on that point, but Romney sort of tripped over himself by trying to accuse the president of not having mentioned terrorism in the Rose Garden. So I don't know. Maybe he was just trying to, you know, not hammer on that and make some larger points and not appear to be combative. But it certainly has worked to his favor in the recent weeks, and it did not, as you say, come up much in last night's
yes.
debate.
Abdul, thank you. Eric in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello. I just have a few comments to make on the Navy part of the debate, where our capital ships used to be the focus of our Navy, where we had large ships that had a small number of ships, but they were large ships, thousands of people serving on these things. And our Navy's made it clear that with like the Chinese influence of their military focusing on capital ship destruction, that our Navy wanted to move into a lighter, smaller, more dispersed Navy. They wanted to have smaller ships that were more efficient, had smaller numbers of crews on them, and were able to access the smaller ports around the world where a lot of today's issues arise.
And you're saying there's not money for that, Eric? That we're not going that direction?
Well, they missed a valid point on there where it does have a cost savings to it. It's a ship replacement where our Navy sits in salt water. The ships do deteriorate over time.
Okay.
They're pounding from the sea, and they do need to be replaced.
All right, Indira.
Well, let me make a point here that, you know, some of this argument and discussion has missed the fact that back in 1916, which, you know, the point that Romney has made is the U.S. has fewer warships than it did since 1916. Back then, a battleship's main guns had a range of about 20,000 yards. And by comparison, the jet fighters that fly today off of the Navy's Nimitz-class nuclear-powered aircraft carriers can reach targets thousands of miles inland. So this whole question about using ship count as an imprecise measure of naval power, you know, in 1916, how many supercarriers and nuclear-powered attack submarines did we have? So while there is a smaller number of ships, they're much more capable because one single submarine can project power up to 1,000 miles away. So I think that, you know, the issue at this point is the Navy intends to buy 10 ships in 2013, and over 30 years, the Navy's ship purchases will average about 8.9 vessels per year, and those are figures according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. So, yes, it's true the most recent low was in 2007 when the Navy had 278 ships compared with 285 today. But, you know, again, I think that no matter who the president is, they're going to be coordinating with the Pentagon about what exactly they need for their inventory. So, you know, some of this has seemed to be politics at work with, you know, one side accusing the other of taking away what the military needs when, you know, let's not forget also this is a point that President Obama has made, that it was Paul Ryan, the running mate of Governor Romney, who actually supported these forced budget cuts that, you know, were sort of forced plans to cut defense spending as well.
Eric, thanks for the call. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning. I think the governor missed a brilliant opportunity last night because, all right, let's say foreign policy is not his, let's say, his strong suit. He should have turned the conversation, and I wonder, you know, who's advising him? He should have turned the conversation to the economy in the following sense, that if we are not strong economically, then we're not going to be able to project force. And he should have hammered Obama with that and not get in the weeds as to, the, you know, how many ships or how many boots. Or I think he was ill-advised and handled it poorly.
Well, I think he mentioned that. He talked about the purpose of foreign policy is to make the world a more peaceful place, and it begins with a strong economy. And he talked about the debt being the biggest national security threat.
I think that again and again, both candidates tried to turn this debate onto domestic issues and economic issues. And you saw again and again the president trying to talk about link Afghanistan and the pullout of combat forces from Afghanistan to the notion of we need to do nation building at home. And that means our economy, our schools, our jobs. We can't be projecting power overseas if we're not powerful at home. And Mr. Romney himself tried to do the same thing. The governor talked again and again about domestic policies in what was a foreign policy debate, and that was striking to many of us that, you know, you heard at one point the moderator saying, well, let's get back to foreign policy issues here. You know, and I think your caller makes an excellent point that that is what voters are concerned about,
right,
particularly independent voters. And so I think both candidates were cognizant of this, and, you know, they were trying to make people see national security sort of in the context of their own lives and economic security as well.
And yet, heavens knows what we've been through the last decade or what we've been through for the last century. You have to pay attention to foreign policy. It's just very, very important. Shame on us for wanting it to be all related to what's going on in America. It's a different world. The world, all the countries interact with each other. What happens in China has an effect here. Certainly what happens in Afghanistan has an effect here.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I think that going into the debate, Romney had a real advantage because his is what, you know, some analysts would call a counterfactual presidency. He can point out the mess in the Middle East and aspire to do better without really having to sort of own the fact that conducting foreign policy is messy, and that for everything that the president and many smart people in his administration have tried to do, that they have, you know, a strained relationship with the Israeli prime minister, even if the U.S.-Israel alliance is still as strong as it's ever been, and according to the defense minister, stronger than ever. You have 4 dead American officials in Libya. You have spinning centrifuges in Iran. You have a humanitarian crisis and a war ongoing in Syria. So it's easy for a challenger to point to all of those problems and to say, I would do better. I think what a lot of people were waiting to hear last night was, what exactly would the governor do differently? And the president was able to sort of catch him on the back foot early on by saying, well, you haven't had the chance to conduct foreign policy. I mean, it's a somewhat condescending remark.
Yes, it was.
But he says, you know, I know you haven't been in a position to actually execute foreign policy, mm-hmm. but every time you've offered an opinion, you've been wrong, mm-hmm. is what Obama said. One point that, regardless of your politics, you can't disagree with Obama is that Romney has been, as Obama said, all over the map.
Yeah.
His positions have changed, but what he did last night was again and again endorse the president's positions on a variety of issues, and I think the president was caught somewhat surprised. In the Afghanistan section, when the governor went first, he, you know, basically endorsed the Obama administration's embraced the entire Afghan policy as if it was his own. And then when it was the president's turn, he was kind of like, yes, well, and then sort of said the same things because he wasn't able to draw a contrast, since the governor was saying, I'd do everything, without saying that the president did. All the things he said he would do were things that the president has done.
Indicating, and certainly we've talked about this issue enough on this show to know that there are some problems with the surge being successful and whether or not the turnover to training people in Afghanistan has been going swimmingly. A lot of people say it has not been, and it would seem as though the president could be somewhat vulnerable on that issue. We've been there for a long, long time. What do we have to show for it? I was amazed that Romney didn't see that as some kind of an opening to give us a nuanced critique of Afghanistan.
I totally agree with you. He handed it to the president by saying the surge was successful, the training of troops is going well. I mean, that's the moment when he could have completely brought up the issue of insider attacks, the so-called green-blue attacks of Afghans attacking their American trainers and counterparts. And, you know, that was his big opening, to say the training has not been going well. You and NATO have been derelict, but he didn't take that opportunity. Instead, he said the training's going well, and we're going to be able to get out of there and hand over to the Afghans. So maybe, his campaign has probably done their polling, and they see that people want to get out of Afghanistan. And so why make a case out of it? Why not reassure people that, yes, we're going to get out of Afghanistan? I mean, once again, this is a case where I think Romney was basically, you know, maybe the president was advised in the first debate, do no harm.
Right.
And maybe Romney was advised the same way in this debate. But it certainly seemed that he was trying to show himself as not being a warmonger and trying to appear, you know, moderate and presidential. That seemed to be his attempt, and certainly maybe part of that being presidential was trying to adopt the president's policies.
Mike, thanks for the call. Raza in Menominee. Hi.
Hi there. I'm an independent, and here's what's happened. Through all these campaigns, I couldn't figure out who to vote for because of their lying and their tactics, political tactics and this and that. And I was even more frustrated after last night because both seem to be agreeing with each other and yet arguing. So being frustrated, I went on my own and did some research. And I was even more frustrated with the media now after doing my research because of the following 2 points. And then I am originally from Pakistan. I want to tell you about something about that divorce part too. But the two things I found was, number one, all these countries or leaders that hate us, like Castro, Hugo Chavez, and Putin, have come out and said that they would like Obama to win this election. That is a big factor as an independent to me. And then the second big factor that came on, and this is all information available online, but the media is not reporting on it. The second big factor is, if our foreign policy is so good, then 8 years of Bush killed X amount of troops. But if you look at it, the 4 years of Obama have killed twice as many troops. So these 2 points the mainstream media is not bringing out, that I was very disappointed and frustrated about. Now, I'm from Pakistan, the third point and final point. What I learned that after the debate last night, the winner of the debate was Pakistan, because Pakistan found out that the husband, America, is too weak to divorce this psychotic wife who will go around and cheat with Taliban and others. And that wife now knows that no matter what I do, my husband won't divorce me because he's too weak.
Indira.
Well, I think your caller makes an interesting point about Pakistan. I mean, the question here was, the moderator asked, is it time to divorce Pakistan? And what he meant by that was that some thinkers have put out the idea that it's time for a containment policy of Pakistan, supposedly. These are, people who are angry about, the U.S. assertion that Pakistan harbors terrorist groups within its borders, such as the Haqqani Network. And I say the assertion because Pakistan denies that and says, we don't give haven to any terrorists. We're just unable. We don't have the resources to control them. And if you know where they are, then why don't you take them out? So this is an ongoing debate between the U.S. and Pakistan. Look, I mean, I think Romney gave the only answer he could give without being attacked from all sides in a way, which is to say, no, Pakistan's an important ally. We can't divorce them. We have to work better with them. I mean, you can certainly argue that maybe he should have given a better answer in that he should have explained what he would do differently to work better with Pakistan. But I think it's kind of on the fringes, people who are saying we should not treat Pakistan as a friend. Think about it. Pakistan is a nuclear-armed, supposedly ally of the United States. It has about, some estimate about 100 nuclear weapons capability. It's right on the border with Afghanistan. The U.S. is going to be pulling its combat forces out of Afghanistan. At that point, if Pakistan's not our friend, it's a real, it's a border through which there could be a lot of foment pushed into the other side. I don't think, the United States wants that. I don't think anyone wants that. So I don't think that Romney answered the question wrongly, but I do see your caller's point that if Romney is putting out there, we're not going to punish Pakistan, then, any forces in Pakistan who wouldn't want to help the United States, anyone who might be supporting terrorism, might think that it has the U.S. between the rock and a hard place, but I'm not sure that that's any different from the reality. To his other point about who supports Obama, I'm not so sure, who has really come out. That's been a meme that has been repeated over and over in a lot of blogs and, right-leaning, right-wing websites. I'm not sure how much truth there is to that, but it really, in a way, doesn't matter. The American people are picking their president, not people or leaders right in other countries. So I wouldn't think that would be the most important thing.
Indira, thank you so much for your very wise analysis. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
The senior correspondent for Bloomberg News, who covers U.S. foreign policy, Indira Lakshmanan, our guest. We are going to continue in just a moment with a woman who has joined us before analyzing the debates, Karen Anderson, associate professor of communication studies at Colorado State University. Before we get to her, just an idea of how candidates agreed. They had a lengthy discussion on Syria in which both of them pretty much agreed that Assad's days are numbered and it would be wrong for us to become militarily entangled in Syria, and we needed to organize moderate forces. We'll listen to a little bit of that and then talk to Karen.
What we're seeing taking place in Syria is heartbreaking, and that's why we are going to do everything we can to make sure that we are helping the opposition. But we also have to recognize that, you know, for us to get more entangled militarily in Syria is a serious step. I am confident that Assad's days are numbered. But what we can't do is to simply suggest that, as Governor Romney at times has suggested, that giving heavy weapons, for example, to the Syrian opposition is a simple proposition that would lead us to be safer over the long term.
We need to have a very effective leadership effort in Syria, making sure that the insurgents there are armed and that the insurgents that become armed are people who will be the responsible parties. Recognize, I believe that Assad must go. I believe he will go. But I believe we want to make sure that we have the relationships of friendship with the people that take his place, such that in the years to come, we see Syria as a friend and Syria as a responsible party in the Middle East.
On this day after the third and final presidential debate, you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Karen Anderson joining us again. She's been with us for discussion of previous debates. She is associate professor, and she is at the Colorado State University. She's associate professor of communication studies, and she analyzes these debate performances pretty darn carefully. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, leave your comments there too. We like to read them, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Anderson, thank you so much for being with us. Hello.
It's very nice to be with you again. Thanks for the invitation, Kathleen.
Yeah, our great pleasure. So just your overall analysis of last night. A lot of people are saying that it was Obama's night. Would you agree?
You know, Obama definitely did a nice job last night. I think that both campaigns are going to be happy with the performance of their candidate. I think that Romney did kind of what he could, given his positions and, you know, the stances that he's taken in the past. So I think that Obama, as everybody acknowledged, Obama had the upper hand going into this debate, and I think he held on to it. But although individual debates shifted the momentum of the campaign for each candidate, you know, certainly Romney got a big bounce after the first debate, and then Obama made a comeback. What we're left with this morning is that neither campaign is a big winner or loser, and a lot of undecided voters are probably likely still undecided if they're basing their decision on just what they saw in the debates.
I was in the basement watching this because it was a baseball thing going on last night as well, so my TV wasn't very good. Our previous guest said that, and I heard this, that Governor Romney appeared to have this a kind of sweat on the upper lip area. Did he appear uncomfortable to you? Did you see sweating reminiscent of Richard Nixon or not?
It certainly wasn't to the level that Richard Nixon experienced it, but I know that I had a Twitter feed going, and a lot of people who were not particularly friendly to the Romney campaign made reference to quote-unquote flop sweat. So I think that on some of the HD TVs that was apparent, but certainly on the feed that I saw, I was watching C-SPAN on kind of a small TV, and it didn't seem as noticeable to me as it did to some other viewers.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked to you about women voters and women candidates and first ladies, et cetera. You, in reflecting on this, thought that there was a lack of explicit attention to women and women voters in each debate, which was surprising. A lot of attention paid to women's rights internationally, but what about at home?
Yeah, I mean, I personally am a moderate woman voter from a swing state. And for the first two debates, I was waiting for somebody to pander to me, and nobody did. So, which in fact made both of the candidates' opening comments, they both referred to women's rights really early in the debate last night. And I thought that in particular, that comment from Governor Romney seemed disingenuous and did seem like kind of a pander, because women really had not made an appearance in the debates, except for that one question that was asked during the town hall debate, which was, of course, posed by a citizen questioner. So I think that if you contrast the 2012 debates with the 2008 campaign season, we, of course, had women in presidential or vice presidential contention in 2008. We have an all-male ticket in 2012. And although in the second debate, Candy Crowley made an appearance as the first woman moderator in 20 years to moderate a presidential debate, she was assigned by the Commission on Presidential Debates to the town hall debate, which is the one where the moderator does the least. So coming out of these three debate seasons, I think that, you know, given that everybody's talking about the women's vote, I was surprised that women's issues and concerns and questions weren't front and center more than they were in the first two debates.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we've had all three of them. Which ones were most informative? Which one was most informative?
You know, that's interesting. I think that the discussion after the first debate could have been particularly informative because there was a lot of question about whether or not Romney was changing his positions. And so I think that if people followed up, there's plenty of fact-checking available online and from various news sources. And if people followed up on that, I think that that particular debate could have been very informative. I think as your first guest was talking about, last night's debate was informative in terms of how similar both candidates' foreign policy proposals are. And I think that that is a really good piece of information because certainly stylistically Romney is trying to distinguish himself as a, you know, somebody who has the potential to be a much stronger leader abroad. But what was informative last night is that there aren't a lot of policy differences, and that's significant.
Let's go to phone calls. Karen in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm calling because I wanted to talk about the and ask a little bit more about the continuous shape-shifting of Mitt Romney. I have seen him come closer and closer, of course, to President Obama's positions. And I remember a saying that my dad always had that helped us to remain responsible as we were growing up. And he would say, "He who pays the piper calls the tune." And I am thinking so much about all this money that has been infused into this campaign and about the huge donations that people like Adelson and others are making to Mitt Romney. I just read the other day that Adelson had said that he was willing to spend $100 million to defeat President Obama. And I'm thinking once, if Romney would become president, once he would be in office, it seems to me that he owes big the two groups of people who would call the tune. One would be all of those huge donors who certainly have agendas and the money to back those agendas. And the second group would be the Tea Party people that he pacified during his primary campaign so that he could get the nomination. And
all right, let me hold you there. We have a ton of calls. Professor Anderson.
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting about the debates in particular, it's customary for both candidates to play to their base during the primary season and then to run to the middle. But what the Romney campaign did that was different this year is he did not run to the middle during August when in September, right around the political conventions. He chose Ryan as his running mate and continued to play to the base. And in fact, he continued to play to the base until that first debate. And I actually believe that that's one of the things that threw Obama and affected Obama's performance, that Romney really did change quite a few positions during that first debate. And so I think that what people have to ask as they're reflecting on the three debates is, all right, with the composition of the party and the fact that it were Mitt Romney get to be elected, he's going to want to be renominated and reelected by his party. People really need to pay attention to the composition of the power base in each party to know which version of the Romney agenda you're going to get. Are you going to get the Romney agenda that was on display in the political conventions, or are you going to get the Romney agenda that's been on display during these three debates?
In terms of the ads, we're in a swing state, too, and I haven't met anybody, Republican, Democrat, Independent, who hasn't said enough already. They are sick of them. It's just way over the top this year. You must be seeing the same thing in Colorado.
Yes, they're wall-to-wall in Colorado. The tough thing with political ads, and the research shows that if 90% of an ad campaign or of a campaign's political ads are negative, they do depress voter turnout. But if a lot of these ads are contrast ads, which many of them contrasting one position with another position, those ads do tend to motivate voters to get out and vote. And negative ads in particular tend to motivate, the research has shown, conservative voters. And so the Romney campaign is not at as much of a risk by running a lot of negative ads. That's likely to still turn out his base. The Democratic base tends to respond more negatively to a whole bunch of negative ads. But the bottom line is the campaigns wouldn't be spending the kind of money that they are on these ads if they weren't working. Everybody says they hate them, but they work every year.
Well, they're spending the money because they have the money, too, right? They can spend whatever they want now.
Right, but I think if they were having the opposite effect, if they were actually driving voters away like voters say they're driven away, the campaigns wouldn't be running them. They would funnel their money into alternative campaign strategies.
Hmm.
Sadly, all the data suggests that negative ad campaigns work.
Yeah. Well, I hope you or somebody does a really thorough study of the ads this year, because I think it's different. I don't know. I think so. Karen, thanks very much for the call. Glenn in Manitowoc. Hi.
Yeah, one comment. Well, my peers, unfortunately, are always looking for simplistic, overly simplistic answers. One comment I've heard Mr. Obama make throughout the debates was germane to all three subjects, and that is as follows. The tax breaks for jobs going overseas should end, and only tax breaks for production and job creators in this country. Now, that seems like a very, very clear policy plan on all fronts, because it, of course, affects our trade policies, et cetera, et cetera. And the producing nations are the strong nations, and over the last 30 years, we've ceased to be a producing nation. Now, that to me seems like a very clear agenda for the next 4 years, and yet I hear no discussion on it whatsoever. Even so much I had to ask your screener, am I imagining that I heard that? Comments, please.
I think last night's discussion about China's monetary policy was, the Romney camp's attempt to sort of get at that question. But once you kind of wade into the weeds of monetary policy, it gets more complex than what most voters can or are willing to kind of digest. So I certainly have heard that trade policy question that you mentioned in the ads that I'm seeing in Colorado, in both Obama and Romney's ads. They're both addressing this issue of trade and tax breaks. So I think that they're trying to distill that message simply in their ads. And last night, we did get into a more complex discussion, but I think that it was, unfortunately, so complex that it was the nuances were probably lost on most voters.
Thank you very much, Glenn, for the call. John in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, one thing that jumped out at me, and that's partly because there's a parallel with a Ronald Reagan speech in his campaign, is that Romney repeatedly, and in sort of forced ways, kept on coming back using the word peace. And it makes a lot of sense, because he talks tough, but the only actual policy that people can tell from this, what he's saying, is that he's going to increase military spending. And after, George Bush and the wars we, got into and were mismanaged, in my opinion at least, I think a lot of people are sensitive to tough talk, and the Romney campaign seemed to be concerned that he had to do something about that. I mean, there was a Reagan speech where he spoke and used the word peace all like this, and the idea of Reagan as a warmonger just kind of disappeared from the reporting coverage after that. They seem to be trying something similar here in this debate.
Professor Anderson.
Absolutely. Romney has explicitly invoked the phrase peace through strength, which was, of course, the Reagan-esque mantra as well. I think that the Obama campaign was prepared for that with the, one of the signature lines that came out of the debate. You know, when it comes to our foreign policy, you seem to want to import the foreign policies of the 1980s, social policies of the 1950s, and economic policies of the 1920s. So I think that Obama was trying to do something similar to what conservatives often do, which is take a strength of Romney, that he's being compared favorably to Reagan in his comportment during this campaign, and turning it into a liability and saying, all right, yeah, if you want to go back to the 1980s and fight Russia and have a Cold War, then vote for Romney. But if you want to deal with 21st century global politics, then you might want to stick with me.
And thanks very much for the call. Well, in a way, it's kind of sad the debates are over. They're always my favorite part of this, other than Election Day. I enjoy that as well. But I want to thank you so much, Professor Anderson, for being with us yet again. And all the best to you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Invitation, Kathleen.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Karen Anderson, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University. And before that, we spoke with Indira Lakshmanan, Senior Correspondent for Bloomberg News, who covers U.S. foreign policy. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. See, with us for the second hour of the show, we're going to talk about a very, very thought-provoking play at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And we remind you to, if you didn't get on today, to go to our Facebook page and leave messages about what you thought about the debate, because it's always fun to read your smart, thoughtful answers. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network.
You probably heard that A Prairie Home Companion is coming to Madison for a sold-out show in January. Although the live Prairie Home Companion show is sold out, a second show, Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Late Show, has been added after the early show. Songs, stories, and everything you love about Garrison Keillor in an after-hours edition. For more information and a chance to win tickets to the Prairie Home Late Show, go to WPR.org/Madison.
Support for WPR comes from Air One Mountain Outfitter, offering name brand clothing and gear for outdoor enthusiasts, located in Middleton at Greenway Station and Milwaukee at Bayshore Mall, or at airone.com. Air One is nowhere spelled backward.